Welcome back to Boston Public Radio. Jim Browdy and Marge Regan. We're live at the library, streaming at youtube.com/GBH News. We are not at the library tomorrow. It is closed for Juneteenth, but Boston Public Radio is not closed. We'll be doing a live show from Brighton. Joined now at the library desk by Corby Kummer. Corby's the executive director of the Food and Society Policy Program at the Aspen Institute, senior editor at the Atlantic, senior lecturer at the Tufts Friedman School of Nutrition, Science, and Policy, and a multiple, I repeat, multiple James Beard winner. Nice to see you, Corby Kummer.
Nice to see you both.
Well, it's great to see you.
So, Corby Kummer, let's start with my favorite story of the week.
Too.
The Perfect Meal, written by Emily Heil.
What's her name?
Heil.
And this is in the, what is this? In the
Washington Post.
Okay, I'm goofing that up. Emily, anyway, the perfect
Whoever
meal.
Whoever she is.
Emily Heil in the Washington Post. What is the perfect meal?
It is a dry martini, French fries, and a Caesar salad.
I love it. I mean, she's right. Isn't she right?
Well, what I like the idea is it's a pre-flight meal. That's a great thing to have at an airport to relax you, take the edge off. Torture your seatmate with the garlic from the anchovy dressing and the Caesar. It's snacky, it's mealy, it's salty, it's alcoholic. It checks a lot of boxes.
By the way, it is a salt bomb. That's when I was reading it before I got to the final paragraph, where she acknowledges that. That's the motivation. By the way, sometime later this week, we're going to actually take your calls on what is your variation of what she calls the CFM, Caesar salad, fries, and martini perfect meal. Do you have a perfect meal?
Yeah.
You're too embarrassed to tell us?
No.
What is it?
You know, if I really had my way, it would be a club sandwich from a hotel order place. I mean, what's better than a club
sandwich? With a drink, do you
what's
drink?
What's better than a club sandwich? Not anymore. No, I don't drink anymore. Because of sleep.
I do.
It just robbed my sleep. But wouldn't that be great?
I mean,
you had something like a club sandwich just now.
I just did. I had the sandwich over here.
Bacon and guacamole.
It's a bacon guacamole. Avocado.
Oh, avocado.
Yeah,
sorry.
It's very, very good. Now, I don't know if the bacon is very good for you, but it tastes very good.
Nowadays, it's like a club salad, a Cobb salad between bread.
Those are good.
But,
yeah.
You know, there's nothing like a club sandwich.
Well, I just think it's sort of a fun thing to do with a couple of friends out for lunch. We're all going to have martinis, French fries, and Caesar salads. It would be sort of perfect.
And then you could say the Post says it's a thing. So
that's
let's
right.
Do it.
And then when you're finished, you could have something sweet for dessert to kind of top it all off. I would think, what's your favorite meal? Oysters?
What?
What's your favorite meal? Oysters?
I take my favorite meal from Joey Chestnut, like a dozen hot dogs. It's me. And if you can eat them within 2 minutes, it's even better. I don't know what it is. Every meal is my favorite meal.
That's right.
But by the way, I don't know why Marjorie and I love this story so much, but you should really read it, and I think you'll feel the same way. Emily Heil, H-E-I-L, Washington Post, the Caesar salad, fries, and the martini really is the perfect meal. Okay, so here is the news story in the food world of the week. Here's a clip of this Massachusetts man stopped by the TSA, and he was stopped because his luggage was full of Spam. Here he is.
So it's all, that's a case of Spam that I'm taking. I'm so embarrassed.
They're not like regular flavors.
No, they're like the special flavors. I was going to say, I can put the Hawaii special edition in there.
It's
too hard to make that out. Essentially, let's stop that. The guy himself, the Massachusetts, so it's all, that's the case in Spam that I'm taking. I'm so embarrassed, he says. The TSA guy gets into it, says, they're not like regular flavor. And then the guy says, no, they're like the special flavor, the Hawaii special edition in there. And he had like 16 cans of Spam. You're smiling too. It's a great story, isn't
it? Well, yeah, it's teriyaki flavor. It's all kinds of exotic brands. There is a Spam museum. He grew up in Hawaii. Hawaii is the national Spam is the national dish of Hawaii. People who like it love it, and Spam reached out to him to be an influencer. So this is only going to do
gold.
Him good. This guy,
that's right.
Do you eat, have you ever eaten Spam?
I have,
and it is horrible. Horrible.
It's not so horrible. No, it's just salt and fat. So if you think this is salt and pork fat, really it's salt. It's kind of okay.
You ever had Scrapple? I'm a Pennsylvania kid. You ever had Scrapple? I mean, it's sort of a Scrapple variation, is it not?
Right, or liverwurst, but with less flavor. Or porky. So, no, it's not so bad. If you know, it was developed, I honor the Hormel who developed it as a way of paying the health insurance for his employees. He had promised them before the Depression. This is a great story. Then the Depression wiped them out. He had to find a way of making scraps and fat a saleable product to honor his commitment to pay the health insurance. I don't say Hormel or Saints today, but it has a very honorable background.
Did you ever go to the museum? We've talked about the museum in Paris.
If people haven't seen this video, though, it's great. The TSA guy doesn't really know what to do. He's emptying spam can after out of this guy's backpack, and he's lining them all up on the table. And you're thinking, does he think this guy's got a bomb in here? Or what exactly? I mean, he was so meticulous in his arranging of the spam.
But he was a good person, too. He was not like heavy-handed like some TSA people occasionally can be.
No, he was not. I think he was getting a kick out of it. It's not every day someone comes through your line with like 27 cans of spam.
Right, but he was opening the baggage, not the cans.
Yes. That's right. He was opening the baggage.
So, Corby, a multiple award winner, here is your quiz of the day.
Oh, boy.
Who are the most famous people ever who commented on the spam?
I absolutely lose this quiz.
Okay, here it is. Monty Python on spam. Here it is.
Oh, of course.
Well, spam, egg, sausage, and spam. It's not got much spam in it. I don't want any spam.
Why can't you have egg, bacon, spam, and sausage?
That's got spam in it.
Not as much as spam, egg, sausage, and spam.
Look, could I have egg, bacon, spam, and sausage without the spam? What do you mean? I don't like spam.
Spam, 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 spam.
I don't know why it's one of my favorite Monty Python bits.
But remember, the entire musical based on Monty Python is called Spamalot.
Nice indeed.
Spamalot, that's
Spamalot.
Right.
Spamalot. So we're talking to Corby Cummer.
Let's talk about this restaurant where no women under 30 are allowed to go and no men under 35. What's up with that?
So it turns out this is the Bliss Caribbean restaurant in St. Louis County, Missouri, where the owners decided, we're going to give people an adult holiday, so we're going to put an age limit on it. What was fascinating to me about the story was, it looks like a restaurant or any public place is allowed to put an age limit on it, and they can check IDs, but not to make a different age for men and women and say that, you know, women are still attractive over 30, but men want their pick over 35. That was a little nuts.
Yeah, maybe the same age. I should have done both 30 or both 35. But the idea is that it's going to be calmer, less noisy.
It's a PR move. That's BS. It's all about PR because they got a huge story in the New York Times.
Yeah,
don't you think?
Well, maybe you don't want to sit next to the 20-something bros.
But here we are talking about it. And I bet other restaurants are going to try this idea, which is no kids, no screaming kids, maybe no pets, and then a civilized dance floor where at 1 o'clock or something you can get a little
dancing, raunchy
and nobody's going to judge you.
I love that. I love that. Yeah, they have a marble dance floor and they have a party later in the evening for everybody who wants to dance around.
But you see what they meant? We talked about the following about a year ago when it came out. Buried in the story is a place called Nettie's House of Pizza. Do you remember this, Marjorie? In Denton Falls, New Jersey. It posted on its Facebook page in February of last year that kids under 10 were no longer allowed in the restaurant.
Yeah.
And by the way, I love kids. You got to do that as a mandatory so you don't get hate mail. I love this concept. Isn't it? I mean, why is this not spread more? Because they're worried that parents are going to feel they're unkind. I mean,
and
who doesn't want to go to a nice restaurant with no kids?
And also worried about social media campaigns
against them.
Which actually happened.
Against Nettie's.
Yeah.
Yeah, right. But isn't this, I mean, you are a fairly astute surveyor of the restaurant scene. When most people go out for adults for a fairly nice meal that isn't cheap, you don't want to hear screaming kids in the damn restaurant,
right? You know, I'm a terrible survey of one, but every so often there are screaming kids on an airplane because of the altitude change. I'm on a lot of airplanes. I go to a lot of restaurants. If I see kids, they're mostly well-behaved. I mean, I don't want to generalize.
You only need one, my friend.
Okay. Yeah, Jamie's looking very skeptical. He has a son.
Well, we know about his son. Not sure he's ready for the restaurant world yet.
No, I believe in letting kids into restaurants.
No, you don't.
Yes,
they shouldn't
I
be on
do.
Airplanes either, by the way. I mean, I'm serious. I don't mean they can't fly somewhere.
Let's go in the
there
wing.
Should be flights that allow kids, and there should be restaurants that allow kids. But there should be some places where you can get a respite from that one kid or two kids who are missing? You know, I know you well enough to know if you're in a nice restaurant you really wanted to go to, whether for work or pleasure or whatever it is, if there's a kid who's misbehaving, it poisons the whole deal.
If you're in a nice restaurant that charges a lot of money, chances are parents are not going to be bringing their kids there. And if you go after 7 p.m., it's probably beyond their bedtime, and you can avoid them anyway.
Yeah, you don't want to bring kids to a really snazzy restaurant until they're old enough to behave themselves in a snazzy restaurant. And you rarely do see it. I don't see it that much.
I think my attitude is if the restaurant does not serve Spam, there should be no children in the restaurant. That's, that's my rule of thumb.
I think you should feel free to go over to the parents and tell them they're doing a terrible job of raising their children.
Yeah.
And would they please shut that child
up? By the way, I did that on an airplane, as Marjorie Wells knows.
Yes, and you were
I was ushered
arrested.
Out of my seat and told that if I said one more word to the child or his father, that the marshals, U.S. Air Marshals, would greet me at Logan when we land. So I tried that. Corby Cummer, it wasn't very successful.
At a play, not a restaurant.
And that's who we're talking to, Corby Cummer.
Yeah, this next story is very upsetting. I mean, it's really hot today. It's going to be hot right through Friday here. But they talk about in the story about the people that are working in the kitchens and cooking the food in some of these restaurants where the temperature is getting up to triple digits.
So we think a lot about, or those of us in the food justice racket think a lot about farm labor and what temperatures are like on the farms. Terrible stories we read even during the pandemic about not giving employees or workers any water, access to water, access to bathroom breaks. It was terrible. Argues for unions. But, you know, why haven't we thought enough about kitchens? And when I was doing on my Aspen program a lot of COVID safety guidelines, ventilation. We were thinking a lot about temperature and ventilation in restaurants. But now there's a move to unionize kitchen workers to force overtime, depending on what the temperature is, or double time. I think it's 75, 77, or 85. And a guy, it starts off with a wrenching story of a guy who has to support his family, and he had to quit his job supporting his family because he couldn't sleep. It interfered with his heat regulatory mechanism, so he couldn't sleep at night, which meant he couldn't function in his job or as a father. And it makes you think, okay, I mean, the main line of the story in Mother Jones, unsurprisingly, is unions are a good thing. Let's let unions help protect the kitchen workers.
Yeah, but this whole notion of them paying time and a half in certain circumstances when the heat reaches a certain level sort of misses the point. And while it's good if the conditions are going to be horrible and you want to work there, that you get more money, the point is made, I think, by a Starbucks worker. Heat pay is great, but we would actually like the workplace to be a reasonable, safe temperature year-round. That's the goal. The goal is not to compensate me when I work in a horrible environment that's unhealthy. The goal is to make the environment healthy. And what I didn't understand, and I assume this is a function of effect on the food or the cost, why aren't kitchens not air-conditioned? Or the heat is so intense that air-conditioning wouldn't make a difference?
The heat is so intense that stoves, this guy at the beginning of the story, worked the grill station.
Yeah.
You know, grill stations just don't get cool. And even if there's very powerful ventilation that satisfies all the regulations of getting out the smoke, it doesn't necessarily lower the temperature. It's incredibly hard. Just last night at midnight, I've invited a restaurant owner from Saigon Social in the Lower East Side of New York. It's a fabulous story. She opened the week of the pandemic. She kept the restaurant going. She's built a huge social media following. She's great. Yesterday, her air conditioning went out in Lower East Side, New York City, which is going to have high 90s. So she stayed up the whole night to try to get repairmen, and today it's back on. But, you know, restaurant by restaurant, for an individual owner, it's an incredible challenge to keep things cool. It's not easy to cool a kitchen, ever.
You know, also, I don't know if you made this point. If you did, my apologies. But climate change has exacerbated the pain of heat in kitchens. I mean, it sort of creeps in. It's a term I never heard before, attribution science. And it's the term in this story, wherever it was, in Mother Jones, about those who look at how the impact that climate change has on a whole host of things, how much you attribute to climate change. So obviously, the need to address this is huge, to say the least. talking to Corby Cummer, our Corby guy. We only have a couple of minutes left. There's a wonderful story, and I don't remember where this is either. I was in Dorchester the other day, and I was ahead early for me. I went to a fabulous Vietnamese market, supermarket. Was it the New York Times a story? And obviously people know H Mart is all over the place. That's now a national change. What's the role of these, mostly Asian, I think. There may be some exceptions. These sort of, what used to be specialty, mostly family-run markets that now have become not only chains, but chains where you can sort of get everything. And at least from my perspective, the feel of a lot of these places is so much more appealing than a traditional supermarket, even though I do love Market Basket. So what's your take on this?
Well, the local presence of these is H Mart. Remember it went in the original, one of the original Bread and Circus locations right in the middle of Central Square?
Mm-hmm. Yes.
And how excited we all were and are about H Mart.
Still there.
I am because it has Paris Baguette, which is a French pastry chain that's part of
H Mart. Incongruous, but it is great.
Owned by them. But the best Japanese, the best French pastry in the world is in Japan. So,
is that so?
Oh, best. Yeah, the best
really?
Work people,
oh, God,
craft.
They have a Japanese pastry place on Beacon Street right
I
next
went
to
the other fabulous. Day. Japanese.
Is
oh, my God, is that
fantastic.
Spectacular.
Those little brioche with the cream in the middle.
Yeah.
Oh, my God.
I remember Japanese was in Brookline. It was
That's
in Washington
right.
Square for a while. So in any case, they're very good markets. They have a lot more produce and a lot more kinds of things. The point of this story in the Times was twofold. First, Asian taste and sauces and sriracha sauce and different soy sauces. There are so many different kinds of soy sauce, different levels of fermentation, different kinds of flavor. An appreciation for it comes if you have access to them at these Asian markets. But it was dual because it also quoted this story. A lot of people who relied on the interaction with a local owner at an Indian market, at an Asian market, as sort of eroding community values and community relationships.
You know what the other great thing is about going to those kind of places? I don't know if you do, Marjorie.
What?
I find it hugely fun to be in a place where you don't know what half the things are. And they're willing to explain, people who work there, and then you integrate them into your cooking, assuming you attempt cooking, Marjorie. And it's really a thrilling kind of thing. You know what's also thrilling? Having you in person for a segment.
A
we haven't seen you in months, Corby Cummer. It's great to see you.
Great to be here.
Just real quick, because we're out of time here, but you're not supposed to call it an ethnic grocery store because it's expanded way beyond that. Is that the theory? So that's one of the messages.
I thought that was a ridiculous point.
Okay.
Dumb. Let's just stipulate that authors don't write their own headlines.
Okay, they do not write their own headlines.
Nice to see you, Corby Cummer. Be well.
Thank you so much, and great to see you, Corby. We've been speaking with Corby Cummer, food man, executive director of the Food and Society Policy Program at the Aspen Institute, a senior editor at The Atlantic, and a senior lecturer at the Tufts Friedman School of Nutrition, Science, and Policy. Thank you very much, Corby. Up next, we're going to talk to the president of the Boston Public Library, David Leonard. We're going to talk about, we missed some days here because of the air conditioning. It's back. But we're also going to talk about what is up at the Boston Public Libraries around the city this summer. You're listening to 89.7 GBH Boston Public Radio, broadcasting from the wonderfully air-conditioned Boston Public Library and streaming at youtube.com/GBHnews.